Okay, even though the focus is now on shopping, food is one of the highlights of this holiday week as we gather in the kitchen to chop, bend, blend, and bake. It's also true that for a growing number of Americans, food has taken on a higher priority all year long. NPR's food and health correspondent Allison Aubrey joins us with a big stack of cookbooks in hand.
That's right, and they are heavy, too.
So, Allison, heavy cookbooks and all, hundreds of them, in fact, are out there every year. What do this year's cookbooks say about how Americans are thinking about food?
You know, lots of people are clamoring to be closer to their food, to know, you know, where it comes from, what's in it. People like me who want to have home-cooked meals for their families, but who are working all day. I call this the slow cooker crowd.
I'm a member. I am a member of that crowd.
Good to hear it. So there's a spate of slow cooker cookbooks. Here's one, 365 slow cooker suppers. The theme of it is make it fast, cook it slow. And here, even America's Test Kitchen, the folks behind Cooks Illustrated, has a book, The Slow Cooker Revolution, everything from barbecue, I'm flipping through, stir fries, stews, even a chocolate cheesecake you make in the slow cooker.
The other day I made a vegetarian chili with cocoa powder in my slow cooker.
That sounds good.
I loved it. But I'm wondering, how big is the slow cooker crowd in America?
Well, you know, the use of crock pots and other brands of slow cookers has really accelerated. A big food research company called the NPD Group estimates that 25 years ago, about 8% of households used a slow cooker. That number has tripled. So apparently there are lots of us who are cooking on the run.
So obviously those people want to save time. But what about the other end of the spectrum, people who want to spend time cooking?
Right. The do-it-yourselfers. These are people who, like us, enjoy connecting with food, but seem to have more time to invest. They're going beyond cooking from scratch. I mean, they're actually mastering the techniques such as pickling, fermenting, smoking. Here I've got a few examples. I've got a book that's entitled Mastering Fermentation. Everything from fermented flatbreads to make your own yogurt to kombucha. You know, to some extent, this is a pushback against the long labels full of strange sounding ingredients. Here's a book here, Charcuterie, The Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing. And, you know, this is really for the person who aspires to make their own bacon or sausage. I flipped through it briefly, looking at a recipe for maple cured smoked bacon, thinking, you know, hey, this could be fun. I have two sons who love bacon. The first two steps sounded okay. It involved rubbing a curing mixture of salts and maple syrup over the pork belly.
Okay.
But by step three, which is a 7-day process of turning the meat, fussing with the rub, I said, you know what? This is for people who have more time on their hands.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like a friend of mine who once was so committed to making the perfect kimchi that he made it and buried it in his backyard and had to come back to it 4 months later and remember where he had put it.
Right.
Masters of fermentation there. Okay, so what about the other trends we hear so much about? I mean, and part of it for genuine health reasons, like those who have to have a gluten-free diet or choose to be vegan.
Right, and that's the beginning of it. I mean, there's certainly new gluten-free titles and lots of books that are tapping into this growing list of health concerns, you know, from allergies to inflammatory disease. I think increasingly people blame specific foods for what ails them and also believe that other foods can cure them. So I've got this one book here. It's called Sweet Debbie's Organic Treats. It's from Debbie Adler, who opened an allergy-free vegan bakery in Los Angeles a few years back. And I love the blurb on the front cover. It really sums it up. It says, no gluten, no eggs, dairy, soy, sugar, or nuts, no problem. And I'm thinking, that is a lot to exclude from a cupcake, right? I mean, in this book, expect just a different ingredient list altogether. You're going to see things such as stevia, a plant-based sweetener, coconut nectar, and of course, gluten-free flour.
Yeah. So I have to say that as a lover of cupcakes, I was initially dubious about the idea of a gluten-free or vegan cupcake, but not that long ago, I actually had one from a master baker here in Boston, and it was amazing. Some of those recipes really do work very well. Speaking of which, I'm wondering, Allison, how many people actually genuinely cook from these cookbooks, or are they just, you know, sort of beautiful things to look at to have about your kitchen?
It depends. I mean, some really are eye candy, right? Sort of aspirational. Some are fairly practical. I would put the Ottolenghi books. Ottolenghi is a London-based chef. He both writes about food and runs restaurants restaurants into this category of practical. These recipes, I've got here a new book of his called Odelenge, the Cookbook. These are really, you know, a celebration of fresh, simple things. Mm. He and his partner, Sami Tamimi, tell you how to make it fresh while adding, you know, Middle Eastern flair with spices.
So very doable, absolutely.
That's right.
Now, what about what we might see next year in terms of cookbooks and how Americans are cooking?
You know, I would expect to see a lot more Mediterranean cookbooks with all of the emerging evidence on the benefits of eating a plant-based diet, you know, less emphasis on meat, more emphasis on fruits, vegetables, fishes, beans, legumes, whole grains. I think we're seeing a lot of interest in this pattern of eating, and so likely a lot more cookbooks to come.
Well, Allison Aubrey is NPR's food and health correspondent. Allison, thank you so much.
Thank you, Meghna.